Well, hello, I'm Chris Mandel. I'm the director of the Sedgwick Institute, and I want to welcome you to this installment of Sedgwick Institute Live, where I profile influential thought leaders who make a difference and whose interests lie in the risk and insurance world. Today, I'm talking to Courtney Claflin, executive director of captive programs at the University of California, with over 20 years of alternative risk transfer and captive experience. He's developed a wealth of knowledge from working at one of the world's biggest and most complex university systems, now operating multiple captives with assets totaling $1.5 billion. So welcome, Courtney, to the SI Live podcast.
Thank you, Chris. It's good to be here.
Appreciate you taking the time for this. So as I always do, I like to just get everybody a little bit of a grounding in who the person is. So tell me a little bit on the personal side about your family and what you do for fun.
Well, I've got a 24-year-old son and a 2-year-old grandson that are back in Minnesota. For family, what I do for fun, I like to golf. I love boats. I like to fish. I like to camp. Father-son camp and fishing trips are the highlight of my years. And then now that I'm on the West Coast, it's easier to get to beaches and sunshine and water. So I enjoy all of that as well.
Very cool. So are you a native Minnesota? Is that what I recall?
No, I was actually, I'm a native Dakota boy. I was born in South Dakota, and at age 5, I moved to North Dakota and finished up high school there, and that's where a lot of my family's still in North Dakota. And then I went to college in Minnesota and brief couple years traveling after college, and then back to Minneapolis for about 33 years.
Very good. And now you're living in Sacramento, right?
No. Now I live in the Bay Area. The headquarters of the University of California system is in Oakland, which is about 5 miles from our first campus, which is UC Berkeley. That's about 5 miles away. So I'm in the office of the president, which is the system-wide administrator. So I'm in the Bay Area.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, let's talk now about how you got into this mess.
Yeah.
Seriously, you're, I think, one of the most impressive captive leaders that I've ever run across. You know, I've run captives and dabbled in it most of my career for different Fortune 500s, but in all honesty, I've never come close to the kind of operation you've got set up there, which we're going to talk about here in a minute. But give me an idea of how you got into this and give me an overview of your career.
Well, after I was a ski bum in Aspen for a couple of years, I moved back to Minnesota, and I, like a lot of the people from my college, we work for a small mutual company called Federated Mutual Insurance Company, and it's a Minnesota domiciled insurance company. We would go through a year-long training program, and then we'd get a territory, and in that territory, you sold Federated products, so P&C, life, health, pension, profit sharing, 401ks, the whole gamut. We focused on small to middle market business. You know, I think my largest account in the 15 years I was at Federated was $500,000 of premium. But one day, got home from a CPCU exam, and in that CPCU exam, I learned about captives. And I said, I have to do this because I come from a family of PhDs and MDs and all of that. And what I am is I'm a hockey player. And that's what I went to college to do. And I figured, hey, that could be my PhD in insurance. So I resigned from Federated, went to an independent agency, and built up a book of business selling insurance. And on the side, taught myself through a lot of wonderful people who helped me along the way, taught myself how to build a captive. And I built my first one in, I believe it was 2001. And then that led to another and another and another. And I did it all as a employee of an independent commercial insurance agency in Minneapolis.
So what kind of clients were you putting those facilities together for?
Well, the first captive I built, which is still the hardest one I ever built, was for a group of farm cooperatives, full-service farm cooperatives. in the outstate Minnesota area. They had a lot of struggles buying property insurance, automobile insurance, liability insurance, workers' compensation, and it was a very hard market for them. And the number of markets that would insure them were shrinking, and so they found out about me after a speaking engagement somewhere, where somebody actually thought I knew what I was talking about, and we started to have meetings, and ultimately they hired me to build the captive for them. And probably like a lot of captive practitioners, you know, you say thank you very much, and you get back in your car and you drive home and you go, okay, what the hell did I get myself into? But that's how you learn. So I would build group captives. I was involved in a number of group captives, built a health insurance captive for health insurance, did a couple of 831Bs for small companies, did a few single parent captives, and so that continued until we sold our agency to Marsh. And then I took a couple of years and worked for a publicly traded company to build a captive platform for their company nationally. And then left there after about 3 years and took a year off and was contemplating my future. And all of a sudden a recruiter called, and there was this organization called University of California that had a captive, and they were looking for somebody to run it. And I didn't know who UC was. You know, I've been up north my whole life. And once I found out how big and broad and robust UC was, and they had a captive, and they really didn't know what to do with it, I said, wow, that's a opportunity for a captive guy. That's an opportunity of a lifetime. So I moved out to California midway through 2015 and have been here since.
Was that under Cheryl Lloyd? I know she's the CRO now, but I was wondering if it involved the days when Grace Crickett was there.
Well, actually, that's a good point, because Grace Crickett was the chief risk officer here, and she was, her and the CFO at the time, Peter Taylor, were the driving forces behind building our first captive, Fiat Lux, in 2012. Mm-hmm. Grace resigned in 2013 and left the university system. And my boss, Cheryl Lloyd, was promoted to chief risk officer, and she took a look at everything that she was in charge of at the time, and she says, what's this captive thing? I've got to go find somebody that knows how to run it and build it and grow it.
Mm-hmm. How big was it when you took over?
It was about $25 million a premium, about, I think, maybe $1.5 million of assets, and it was doing about three things.
The typical P&C stuff?
Well, it was just doing pretty simple deductible reimbursement policies for comp and GL and Med-Mal.
Where was it domiciled?
In Washington, D.C. We have a campus in D.C., offshore was off the books because of optics. We're a quasi-public institution, and obviously it doesn't look good if you're offshore. We have a campus there. My board of directors is the entire C-suite of the university system, so President Napolitano and the CFO and the chief legal and chief risk and chief operating, and they go to D.C. for business fairly regularly, so it made, and DC's got great law, so it all kind of fit together quite nicely for them.
So you've got multiple facilities now. What other domiciles are you using, or are there others?
No, we use DC for all of them. So it's it's efficient for us. We have a terrific relationship with the regulators. It's very comfortable. DC is very nimble. We're doing a lot of things. We do them rather quickly. And so they've just been very receptive. They work very hard with us and very efficiently with us. And we really, really enjoy being in DC.
Do they tend to favor educational institutions? Is that part of it, or is it just total, you know, ease of doing business?
Well, I think it's a combination, and I wasn't here when they formed it, so I'm just kind of going off what's been told to me. But first of all, D.C.'s got good law. So it's got good cell captive law. It's got good captive law, good regulations. Dana Shepherd's the most tenured regulator in the captive industry. Couple that with our international school up there for international and governmental business students. And then you add to it the travel that our board of directors goes through, and you kind of come up with the formula of this is a good domicile for us.
Yeah. Well, kind of tongue in cheek, I would have thought maybe by now you would have figured out a way to domicile in Hawaii at least one of those facilities.
That was considered, but when you're quasi-public institution, Hawaii is still considered offshore. And so it might be the perception of a junket to Hawaii with your board of directors being the senior officials you see might not look good in the front page of the Sacramento Bee or the San Francisco Chronicle. So,
yeah, no, I actually use this point when I teach when we get to the domicile issue, because when I was head of risk at Red Cross, I had a similar issue, although in that case, like you, I inherited what they had, which was a Bermuda-based facility for the Red Cross exposures. And every year, we ended up having to defend, you know, why we were in Bermuda in front of the Board of Governors.
Yeah.
And every year, they kind of nodded and said, oh, okay, you know, and you can imagine why. I mean, yeah, there are the optics, but then there are the good arguments for why, you know, these more mature domiciles are really great places to do business.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
So UC is, and maybe you can describe the whole system a little bit for people that don't know, because, I mean, I know and you know it's very big and complex. But just give us an idea of what UC consists of from an entity or segment standpoint.
Sure. We have 10 universities. So any university you see that has a UC in front of it is part of our university system. So UC Berkeley, UCLA, UC Santa Barbara, UC San Diego, UC Merced, Riverside, Santa Cruz, so on. So we have 10 universities. We have 5 academic medical centers that all include medical schools. We have 3 national laboratories, Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, and one that most people know of is Los Alamos. And we've got about 280,000 employees or 280,000 W-2s, full and part-time students, probably 400,000 plus. as all research institutions with both graduate and undergraduate curriculum, we invent as a system 5 new inventions a day. We commercialize 120 new companies a year. We've got stuff in outer space. We have things on the bottom of the ocean. We have ocean-going ships. We've got restaurants, bars, sports teams, sports stadiums. We have a human being in every country and every continent and every major body of water in the world right now, either studying or doing research, traveling on university business. So it's big, it's broad, it's robust. I always, when I'm speaking, oftentimes I, just for argument, say, come up with the risk that the university, you don't think the university would have. And I haven't found one yet. I'm sure there's one out there, but it's mesmerizing the things that we do. So it's fun.
Is UC the biggest system, university system in the country?
Yeah, it's the biggest public university system in the world at the moment.
No wonder you took the job. That's so cool.
Yeah, well, I didn't. When I finally got out of the recruiter, I said, well, who is this? And he goes, well, it's UC. And I said, well, who's UC? And he started laughing. And I said, well, I'm not trying to be funny. I don't know. You know, I'm a Dakota kid. You know, I don't know UC, but I've gotten to know it pretty well since I've been out here.
So, you know, it probably is obvious now to any listener, but with that kind of spread of operations and diversity of operations. I mean, the risk profile is probably one of the most complex around, public company, private institution, whatever. So, you know, tell us now about the kind of structure of the, let's call it the alternative risk transfer programs that you've set up, primarily, I guess, through captives, and how you're using these facilities to support all that different activity.
Well, I think, and I often tell people it's not as complicated as you think it is, because we follow kind of the same formula with everything, is that every institution has retentions, and those retentions need to be financed somewhere. And so our retentions, you know, they vary, but they're all in the mid to high millions. And so we finance losses expected underneath those retentions inside the captive. when I got here, we were doing three lines. Now we're up to, I think we're well over 40 different risk financing arrangements inside the captive. So financing and retentions is one thing. the second important thing is direct access to the reinsurance markets. As we all know, there's reinsurance companies that will only do business with insurance companies. And that was a paradigm shift for the people here at UC when I got here and I said, let's go direct access to reinsurance. And they're like, we already go to London. We already talked to reinsurers. And I said, I know, but there's another market that will only talk to insurance companies. And so we've been able to get better terms and conditions, more capacity, more limit, by virtue of these additional reinsurance companies that we can access now with the captive, as opposed to the excess that they were purchasing before. And I always use the analogy, we're buying wholesale now instead of retail. Okay. So there's your second big advantage. A third one is that I get to participate with the reinsurance companies. I do on all my casualty lines. In quota share arrangements, in buffers, in layers. London loves it when you quota share with them, when you stand side by side with them and say, I'll put my money where my mouth is and I'll take a percentage of the loss in a variety of areas, a variety of layers of coverage. So that's another big advantage. I think a third big advantage, which we found with cyber insurance, we had a 3.5 million record medical record breach at UCLA Medical Center. And as you can imagine, everybody, you don't really understand how crappy your cyber coverage is until you have a claim. And we found that out. And then you really find out how big or small the market is once you've had a claim. The market capacity shrinks, your terms and conditions become narrower. And as an insurance company, what I had our professionals here in the office is go build your best cyber policy, and we'll take it and shop it as an insurance company to reinsurance marketplaces. And they said, yeah, but you know, you're going to have $20 or $30 million of retention. And I said, I'd rather have capacity and terms and a higher retention than a lower retention that doesn't have capacity and terms. So your insurance company, that's another big plus for us. And I think the last thing is to take current spend that you have that has underwriting profit into it and self-insured inside your captive. So, for example, we spend $50 to $60 million a year on equipment warranty or equipment maintenance coverage for our research equipment and things like phones and computers and copiers, that kind of stuff. And we built our own program, and now we're throughout the system on a rollout program, we're self-insuring that because there's 50% margin in it. So we can ultimately take that $50, $60 million spend and turn it into 25 to 30. And then we can drive the savings back right to the department level that is spending this money. So we drive the savings right back in rate reductions to the people that are cutting the actual checks. And so now you might have a researcher that is spending $40,000 a year on maintenance insurance for his equipment. Now, if you free up 50% of that, that researcher, he or she may be able to go out and hire a new summer intern to help them. So our whole desire here is to take all of the profits and drive them right back into the university system to support its mission. Now, there's one other really, really big thing that occurred is when I got here, all these self-insured retentions were in trusts or just regular old banking programs. And so you've got, in our instance, hundreds of millions of dollars tied up in these trusts. Number one, they can't be repurposed outside of that individual line of coverage because of the trust. So there was no smoothing between lines of coverage, which resulted in rate volatility back to the system. The second thing was is that in your investment income is restricted, the types of investments you can invest in trusts versus an insurance company. So we did a loss portfolio transfer and brought all of these trusts and banking programs into the captive, built our own investment portfolio, and now we're probably getting 4% more, 3.5% to 4% more investment income than we used to be getting. And when you multiply that times hundreds of millions of dollars, it is material.
Oh, yeah.
And so consequently, we've used the insurance company to create money where no other money existed before. So it's generating revenue.
So what were they using trust structures for? What was the idea there?
Well, we have our two big lines of coverage, our work comp and medical malpractice. I think our work comp premium, or quote unquote premium, which is our self-expected claims, is $140 million a year. Our expected claims on the medical malpractice is probably north of $100 million a year because we've got 14,000 physicians. Those, for 30 years, the retentions, the deductibles, were funded through the trusts. So the actuary comes up and says, you should set aside $100 million for work comp claims this year. They put $100 million, they bill out to the campuses, just like franchisees. Campuses pay the premiums. The money goes into the trust, and then claims pay out as they go. And there isn't a lot of interest income money being generated off of those claim funds. And when you roll up 30 years worth, there's a lot of money sitting in these trusts. And that's the way they did it before. And that's the way a lot of larger organizations that don't have captives, that's the way they do it. They set up trusts. And so when I came, I just said, you know, I made the argument, if you just do an LPT and put this money in the captive, you're going to get an interest income delta. You can direct access to reinsurance, so better terms and conditions and capacity limit. And plus with the captive, like I said before, you know, you can go out into certain insurance spend right now and do it yourself. Instead of having an insurance company sell you insurance, you be the insurance company.
So what kind of aggregate financial impact are you having, you know, by virtue of what you do, both in terms of new revenue generation and cost reduction?
Annualized right now, reoccurring, probably mid 40 millions to low 50 millions. My goal is 100 million a year.
So that's part one of my interview with Courtney Claflin of University of California. look for part two, which will be posted in the next couple of weeks, where we'll go in a little more depth on some of the program elements of captive insurance, the way it's practiced at the University of California. I think you'll find it as or more interesting than part one.